This recording, England 69, is copyright the International Dialects of English Archive. Karma Gets a Cure is copyright Douglas N. Onaroff, Jill McCullough, and Barbara Somerville.
Well, here's a story for you. Sarah Perry was a veterinary nurse who had been working daily at an old zoo in a deserted district of the territory, so she was very happy to start a new job at a superb private practice in North Square near the Duke Street Tower. That area was much nearer for her and more to her liking. Even so, on her first morning, she felt stressed. She ate a bowl of porridge, checked herself in the mirror and washed her face in a hurry. Then she put on a plain yellow dress and a fleece jacket, picked up her kit and headed for work. When she got there was a woman with a goose waiting for her. The woman gave Sarah an official letter from the vet. The letter implied that the animal could be suffering from a rare form of foot and mouth disease, which was surprising because normally you would only expect to see it in a dog or a goat. Sarah was sentimental, so this made her feel sorry for the beautiful bird. Before long, that itchy goose began to strut round the office like a lunatic, which made an unsanitary mess. The goose's owner, Mary Harrison, kept calling Comma, Comma, which Sarah thought was an odd choice for a name. Comma was strong and huge, so it would take some force to trap her, but Sarah had a different idea. First, she tried gently stroking the goose's lower back with her palm, then singing a tune to her. Finally, she administered ether. Her efforts were not futile. In no time, the goose began to tire, so Sarah was able to hold on to Comma and give her a relaxing bath. Once Sarah had managed to bathe the goose, she wiped her off with a cloth and laid her on her right side. Then Sarah confirmed the vet's diagnosis. Almost immediately, she remembered an effective treatment that required her to measure out a lot of medicine. Sarah warned this course of treatment might be expensive, either 5 or 6 times the cost of penicillin. I can't imagine paying so much, but Mrs. Harrison, a millionaire lawyer, thought it was a fair price for a cure. I think that my accent is a true reflection of where I come from in the social spectrum in this country, and I have quite in my area. And I have quite a strong political belief that I won't alter my accent for other people, despite having been sent to a private school, my family having aspirations to fit in with a much more conventional, accepted way of behaving. I've never accepted that. I want to be accepted for who I really am. And if people find it threatening, that's not really my problem. I've always been corrected, as most children are in this country, by my parents for not speaking the Queen's English, dropping my H's and T's. They're in words for a reason, despite the fact that lots of other letters like G, H and other expressions in English language are silent deliberately. To decide on your own to do that is in some way anarchistic, so it should be stamped out, or otherwise you won't be allowed to take part in polite society. I don't think that idea holds a lot of water. I still argue with my dad about it. He tells my brothers off for dropping their T's and says, I know your sister does it, but she's too big to tell off. And I'll say, you know, it's not fair to say that to me when I grew up in a place in Port Slade where it's normal to speak like this. If I'm in working in a shop, if my shop are working, I always try to be polite, and I probably try and sound a little bit more innocent than I really am to try and mask the threatening effects, but I won't try and speak in a more proper way to get respect.